I'm Mark Simpson, and this is a special Ballot 2012 episode of Intersection. President Obama returns to office, but Florida leaning towards the president with results still not officially called. Central Florida congressional races brought home expected results, and U.S. Senator Bill Nelson cruised to victory. Meanwhile, state Democrats make headway in Tallahassee, gaining legislative seats, and a future House Speaker could get swept up in that momentum in another race deemed too close to call on election night. We'll get the inside track with 90.7's political commentators Dick Batchelor and Lou Fry. Plus, what does the rest of the world think about the presidential election and Florida? I'll talk with journalists from Ethiopia and East Timor. It's post-election summaries and analysis on Intersection's Ballot 2012 wrap-up. And here after watching the returns, our Republican and former Congressman Lou Fry. Lou, good to have you with us.
What a lousy day it was. That's a political term.
Well, we get your sentiments off the top, and he's joined by a Democrat and former State House Representative Dick Batchelor. Great to have you with us, Dick.
Sunshiny day, I'm thinking.
Well, let's start with this presidential race. In Florida, results as we speak on Wednesday still not officially in, leaning towards Obama 50% to Romney's 49%. Indications so far, no need for a recount. What's your reaction to the results in Florida still being up in the air, Dick Batchelor?
Well, first of all, I think it's interesting. I thought that it would be maybe skewed really towards Romney. I thought Romney was going to win the state of Florida. I'll confess to that. But it really said all along, we kept saying, I think Lou and I agree, it really was a ground game. What is your get out the vote? And the get out the vote was so good. And also the Democrats did well on the absentee ballot, early voting. So the ground game, if he wins, the ground game delivered it.
What do you say, Lou Fry? A surprise there? Still no result
official?
Not
surprised. You could sort of feel the campaign getting away from Romney. I think it showed us a couple things in the future. One, it's not bad to campaign with $1 billion or so. But secondly, if you have the money, use it well. And what they did is they destroyed Romney's image with the people. They demonized him literally over a period of time. So when it came down to the final vote, we were talking about, you know, it being maybe just the economy is the key issue. I think the key issue was trust. Who do you really going to trust? And even though Obama had a record that was not the greatest in all, people trusted him more than they trusted Obama more than they did Romney. And I think that made the difference because the independents didn't break like they're supposed to break. Usually they break for the challenger, and it didn't happen this time. And I think, again, it was they believed Obama would try, and then things were starting to go in the right direction a little bit.
Interesting comment there, Lou Fry. Do you think some of that has to do with legacy carryover from Romney's shifting positions, becoming
Definitely.
More conservative
right,
in the primary?
Right on the nose, Mark. That's exactly. They use that very effectively. He's all over the place. But, you know, we all know, and Dick says it over and over again, that you get elected, you run to the right as a Republican, the left as a Democrat, and then you run like the devil to the center and jump up and down, right?
Absolutely. You try to make it back to the middle, and sometimes you fall short.
Do you think, Dick Batchelor, that President Obama could have had a bigger challenge if Romney had simply stayed with his more moderate positions that people knew him when he was the governor of Massachusetts?
Yeah, but like Lou said, though, you've got a nominating process, and the fact is, during the nominating process, he got so pushed so far to the right, he could not get back. I think this really bodes badly for Governor Scott, because you've got a U.S. Senate race where Bill Nelson won with a very comfortable margin. And the second thing is that you've got President Barack Obama could, even if he doesn't win the state of Florida, it shows what a get-out-the-vote is. And keep in mind, Governor Scott was very rarely invited or participated, unlike Charlie Crist. I mean, you couldn't separate Charlie Crist from John McCain. So this bodes badly,
or John
I think.
Or
John Morgan. I think this bodes badly for the governor.
A lot of Johns there.
The other thing I think it shows is, and it looks at is when you look at it, and we've been having a discussion with a lot of people, what about Marco Rubio? Mm-hmm. Was a mistake made in not taking Rubio? And when you look at the fact that we'd have taken Florida.
I was going to say, do you think he would have delivered it?
He would have taken Florida and probably
Colorado
and picked up Hispanic voters and split the Hispanic voters.
Colorado,
to some degree.
Some of the states out west.
Absolutely.
And looking back, I think that would have helped.
And you knew that the Obama campaign was trying to target Hispanic voters, not to put too fine a point on it, but they did have Michelle Obama in town the day before the election with the Hispanic singer Ricky Martin, obviously reaching out to that demographic there.
They did, but also, Lou and I pointed out, too, the reason I think that the president thought he was a bit behind in Florida is because he didn't come here, he sent Michelle here. But the fact is, I mean, again,
he figured at that point Ohio was going pretty well, and New Hampshire and the other things. They had the look. You smell a campaign, and when the campaign is talking about, I'm not writing a concession speech, you know,
that means
somebody's writing
about
a concession speech if you've got problems, you know.
Right.
So the hair on my neck had gone up pretty much, and I was not surprised. I knew it was going to be close, but he just didn't have the firepower.
Well, Lou Fry, you understand these machinations better than anybody, and it seemed early on like maybe Romney was ahead of Obama, but as the night went on, we saw that President Obama caught up. And when you look at that election map, nationally, there's a lot more red than blue, it seems, but population geography have to be taken into account. So is it a surprise to you that Obama won so decisively?
Not really. And this is one thing Dick and I both said. We said, look, if somebody's going to win this thing, let them win it decisively.
Absolutely.
You know, if my team isn't going to win, let them at least lose big.
Yeah,
so that
right.
For the country. I mean, seriously. Right. So the country, it's gone. Nobody can complain about the races or hanging chads or anything. It's over with. Now we've got all these problems in front of us. And at least we're arguing about major issues. We're not arguing about this vote or who didn't do something. So from that standpoint, from the country's standpoint, I think the country got a clean election and a clean verdict.
Dick Batchelor, Florida's role as a crucial swing state didn't seem to really tip the balance of the election in Obama's favor. We're still waiting for those results to come in. But certainly Florida, one of the most swinging back and forth states out of that group of swing states. So where do we stand looking forward to Florida's future influence, since it didn't seem necessary for Obama to carry Florida to obviously win the election?
Well, you still have the 29 electoral votes, so the influence will always be there. I think if I make another related point, I think what we have to look at now, the Republican Party has to look at. I've said that the Democratic Party has a very narrow bench. We really don't have a very good bench as far as candidates. But you've got Marco Rubio and you've got Jeb Bush, and they've got to decide what they want to do. Do they want to run for president in 4 years? And in the interim, I think the question is, what influence do they have to try to reconstruct the Republican Party? The Republican Party, in my opinion, it was demonstrated last night, they cannot survive as a Tea Party. You can run to the right if you want to, support a Tea Party candidates in the primary, and they lose in the general. So the Republican Party is going to kind of redefine who they are. And is it going to be a party of a Rubio who's more moderate on immigration and a Jeb Bush more moderate on education? Or is it going to be a Tea Party? That's the big challenge they've got.
Kent has to be big. And I think it's shown that the white vote has gone down 2 percentage points every election. I think it started 78%, and it's gone down, which means the Republican Party's been playing to a smaller base year after year. Now the Republican Party's got to go back and expand that base. They definitely got to get the Hispanic vote. The African-American vote will be difficult some, but it's women, unmarried women. I mean, there's a whole bunch of groups out there that didn't support Romney.
Where, Lou Fry, does that expansion happen first? Is it at the state, local level, or does it happen at the national and filter on down? Who's the leader on changing that makeup?
Well, you've got to have the Republican leadership, which has got to include the House and Boehner, and that has to be involved in the thing, the Senate also. I think the leadership up there, including the chairman of the Republican Party, has got to establish this and then basically move it back down. But all you have to do is look at the numbers. I mean, if the Republican Party doesn't change, it's going to be something we read about in history.
But keep in mind, and Lou knows this better than I do, you always had your social conservatives and you had your economic conservatives. If the economic conservatives was the platform this time, they would have won.
Rockefeller Republicans.
Right. But when you get into the social issues, you put so many voters at risk. Had this been what I would call an economic conservative approach, Romney was winning on the economic message. But when you bring in all these the gay marriages and the choice issue, you just really divide people. And the moderate Republicans start backing off. So I don't know what happens to those people. I'm not to say you don't set aside their interests, but you have to calculate it.
We're talking with 90.7's political commentators, Democrat Dick Batchelor, former State House representative. We're also talking with Lou Fry, Republican and former member of Congress. And speaking of Congress, Lou, let's talk about some of these congressional races. Let's start with Bill Nelson, who trumped decisively Congressman Connie Mack.
There was
55-42%.
Yeah.
What, though, is Nelson's role now in a Republican-dominated state where he continues as basically the lone Democrat from Florida up in Washington, especially in the Senate?
Well, I think Bill now has the opportunity to be a lot more active in the Senate and reach for a leadership role in the Senate. He's been there. He's getting seniority because of so many turns in it. And I think Bill's got to make up his mind. There are people already talking to me and whispering to me and saying, hey, you know, Florida would be a great place to run for the presidency in 16, or at least the vice presidency. And, you know, maybe Nelson can fit in that category.
Isn't he too old?
Nah.
Bill Nelson, he's 70.
So?
70, and they're saying Romney at 65, not another run left in him.
Well, what did they say about President Reagan?
Yeah, right.
Don't use youth against you, right?
But Bill can do 100 push-ups, so this is a good thing.
Yeah.
Well, with two guys who have more experience than me, I'm not going to argue age.
Oh, thank you very much. This, we won't argue youth.
In this tiny studio.
We won't hold it against you.
Right, that's it. That's the line.
Well, what do you think is the next step, though, for Connie Mack, Dick Batchelor? Where does he go now?
I don't think he goes anyplace. I think it's politically. I just don't think he can survive this campaign. It was so negative, and Lou has pointed out more than one time, he got tagged by former Senator Lemieux in the Republican primary, and it went negative there, and all that Bill had to do was take
What was the line that Lemieux...
Basically called him the Charlie Sheen of Florida politics or something like that, you know. And he tagged him. So I don't see there's a big opportunity there. It wasn't even a close race, number one and number two.
He got out of it, and
the baggage he's carrying is just not going away.
Yeah. Well, and he's a good guy.
He's a very good guy.
I wouldn't be surprised at some point down in that district in the southwest part, because that's Republican area, I wouldn't be shocked to see him run for some relatively safe Republican seat in a couple years.
Well, you know, he's married to Congresswoman Mary Bono.
Mary Bono.
Mary Bono of California.
So, yeah, so it would be interesting. He might have to commute.
Let's go back into congressional races. First-time Democratic candidate Val Demings losing to Congressman Dan Webster in District 10. She says she's not going anywhere, got a lot of exposure in this contest, got a lot of money put behind her. So what are some of her options to see, Lou Fry?
Obviously, to run in a different district.
Absolutely,
she should have done that the first time. I talked to Dan on the Friday before Election Day about it, and I said, are you a little worried about the Bloomberg dumping $1,100,000?
More than $2 million.
He came in again after that. Right?
Yeah, and he said no, it didn't surprise him. He's campaigned one way on the ground, like frankly I did, over and over and over again with the people, and he felt very confident of the reception he was getting. It was a good reception. He said he was going to win. He didn't brag. He said he's going to win. It would be close, but he was going to win because he didn't think money could buy that district, and he was absolutely right. And by the way, we can put Val Demings and Sandy Adams on a little platform of their own, because both of them made decisions at the start that really didn't make a lot of sense, and if they'd have made a different decision in terms of where they run, they would have been in the Congress, I think.
Lou Fry, you always advocate for a friendly, congenial relationship in Washington. Webster never ran negative attack ads in his history, didn't do that again. Do you think, is he a harbinger of any change to come?
Yeah, he has worked with, hasn't said much about it, but he's worked with about 12 members of Congress, 6 Democrat and 6 Republican, as sort of a little group to start somewhere this bipartisanship. He started it before the election. He didn't bring it up in the election itself because then it would become political. But he has got people, Democrats, involved in this process. And he really thinks that by the person-to-person campaign, except within the Congress itself, he can make a difference. And he's going to have a real chance really early on in the next 2 or 3 months to see if that works. But he is trying. He definitely is trying. Mm.
Dick Batchelor, talk to me about Alan Grayson.
First, let me say a couple of very quick things about Val Demings. Obviously, a quality person, quality candidate, a great public servant. She's young. I'm sure she has many opportunities open to her. One. Number two, everybody tends to underestimate the loyalty to Dan Webster. And, I mean, he's the one guy who's very much a social conservative, but he does work, but he has diehard people who thinks he's one of the apostles. I mean, they turn out. They are diehard. They would walk on coals for him. So that gets underestimated. He always performs and gets to get out to vote.
And by the way, but, don't you think, Dick, this will scare off any real Democrat for a while
yeah,
in that race?
Because if you can't win for $3 million in a single race like this, you're out of it. But Alan Grayson.
Talk to me now about Alan Grayson.
Okay, I'll talk to you now about Alan Grayson. He will
jumped over Todd Long, crushed him.
He will make it interesting. Obviously, he.
Interesting, but is he going to be effective?
No. Well, if, you know, let me say this, Kendall. He would be effective if he takes a deep breath and kind of reassesses where he needs to be and what he wants to do. If he just wants to be a bomb thrower, no, not even with his own leadership. He's got to decide if he really wants to handle these issues in a more diplomatic way.
Yeah, he doesn't have any friends up there. The other thing is that the Republicans should do, and I've told him to do it already, recommended it, find a candidate, Hispanic, Puerto Rican candidate in that district, and start working today.
They did that, Lou, with John Quinones.
Yeah,
but they need to settle on one candidate.
They've got to settle on one candidate, get the money behind it and so forth, and go after him because he's beatable. He'll make great TV ads, and if there'll be a lot of negative ads in that campaign, and some of them may be true.
I've got a bunch of state legislative races to cruise through in a short period of time here, so let me get quick reactions. Chris Dorworth looks like he could be out of a seat and a House Speaker's post in District 29 to Mike Cleland, Seminole County Attorney. 50-49%, still this, as we speak, too close of a race to call. How does that impact the House, and what do you make of it?
I'm sorry.
Go on, Dick.
Two ways. One, of course, McClellan, keep in mind, the Democrats didn't want to support him at first. The trial lawyers were against him, even though he was a lawyer. They wouldn't put him in. He had no chance of winning, per se. And now look where we are today. Two things. One, either North will get defeated, which would be the biggest legislative upset in the state, or if he's ekes by, he will be thrown out as Speaker designate, in my opinion.
Yeah. The other thing is the sharks are circling. And because of the way it works in the state, you start 8 years ago, basically. So what you have people who were saying the right thing, gee, we hope Chris wins, but they're hoping he goes because they jump a whole couple years in it. And so you've got, in the Republican side, a lot of unsaid people who wouldn't be greatly upset if he lost.
They would not want to throw him out because there is a sense of loyalty. Did I say that with a straight face?
Yeah.
Dick Batchelor, Democrats in this region gaining several seats. Linda Stewart beating Bob Brooks, 52-47%. Joe Saunders beating Marco Pena, 55-44%. Karen Castor Dental, surprisingly, knocking out Scott Plakin, 52-47%. So what does that do, again, for Democrats in the state House?
Well, it doesn't do much because the numbers just are not there. It's great that we won those seats, but we don't have the numbers. And then in the Senate, what we were hoping to get is one or two Senate votes. So at least
the supermajority has been destroyed.
We were trying to. The supermajority has been destroyed. But we just don't have the strength there. Let me tell you about the race I get Plankin, which was phenomenal. He spent over $1 million. I think Marco Pena, who lost, also approached that. If you take the independent super PAC group, so people are beginning to spend $1 million for a state legislative race that's 1/6 the size of the county. It's obscene. Yeah.
It also shows the impact of the Hispanic vote and in the minority vote in this area. This is a changed district when Dick ran and when I ran. It was always Democratic, but now it's more ethnic Democratic.
That's true.
We've been speaking with 90.7 political commentators Dick Batchelor, Lou Frey. Dick Batchelor, former State House Representative, Democrat, head of the Dick Batchelor Management Group. Lou Frey, former Republican congressman. He is currently a Republican still, I should say, and attorney.
Yeah,
why not?
Attorney with Lounge Drostick, Dr. Cameron Reed. Gentlemen, thank you both, and please get some rest.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, the presidential election from an international perspective. WMFE is hosting two international journalists to cover the presidential election through a partnership with the International Center for Journalists. Tito da Costa is a radio journalist from East Timor. He's with RTTLE.EP Broadcasting. Tito, great to have you with us.
Yeah, thank you.
And I'm also joined by Samuel Ndai from Ethiopia. He is a broadcast journalist for radio with Fana Broadcasting.
Thank you, Mark. It's a pleasure to have you, too.
I want to know from you two international journalists, why is the U.S. presidential election so important to your radio listeners in Ethiopia and East Timor? Tito, why is this election important for your listeners back home?
Yes, it is very important for us as international journalists. As you know, that we are a democratic country, but just 10 years independence. And now I have cover some stories related to the candidate's campaign in Florida and some stories in Washington. It is quite different because based on my observation in 1 week in Florida, the candidates attack each other. But the people is, you know, is not reacted. But when in my country, when the candidate during the campaign they attack each other, the militants or the supporter will react. That's the kind of you know, like experience that I feel in during my stay in Florida.
The public reacts in different ways compared to in East Timor. Samuel Ndale from Ethiopia, what is your view on why it is so important for you to bring back information to your listeners in Ethiopia about U.S. presidential elections?
Good, nice question. It's very important for me, for my media and for my country too, to benchmark the democratic process and the election process of America. And we are electing our prime minister 4 years in between, so that it's good to be here and to know, to see the process of election, the way the candidates campaign, the way the people say about the candidates, the freedom.
Do you feel like, does the average person in your home country recognize the names of Mitt Romney and Barack Obama?
Yeah. Yeah, American election is not for Americans only. It's all over the world. It's known, and everybody is keen and focused to follow the election process, because in one way or another, it affects its country's relationship with the United States, and especially in foreign issues. We are very much concerned about East Africa because America is working a good job in avoiding terrorism, so that there in Ethiopia we have a stable country, but in an unstable region. Al-Qaeda is operating in that region. So that we want to know whether the elected American president is so serious about these things and work together.
Tito, talk to me about the recognition factor of the American presidential candidates, Mitt Romney and surely Barack Obama, who had his own childhood somewhat in Indonesia. What is the perception of American elections in that region of the world?
I think in my country, East Timor, Barack Obama is very famous there. I don't know because he's a black skin, as same as Timorese, or I don't know. But I think American election is, I think, affected to the East Timor people. You know, Bill Clinton, the former president, and also Hillary Clinton just visited East Timor, and American embassy in Dili played very important role in terms of supply some grant for education and the social and cultural development in East Timor. So the people are in East Timor is eager to know about the American election.
Samuel, do you think that President Obama has a bigger place maybe in the hearts of the people of Ethiopia because he's part Kenyan? Is he seen as kind of an African president because of his father's heritage, being from an African country?
Yeah, but people are conscious today. They don't see only the color. They see the policy, the strategy, the future. And Barack Obama said a lot of things when in 2008 election, but he's on the right track. Many people say that see that as a development, not as much as they expected, but in a good position. So that with the Arab world, with the Africans, with the Asians, with all of the nations, he tries to build a smooth relationship, a good correlated relationship between the country and the people.
You're listening to Intersection on 90.7 WMFE-FM. I'm talking with two international journalists who are in Florida staying with WMFE for the presidential election to observe it. Samuel Ndala is from Ethiopia. Tito Da Costa is from East Timor. I'm Mark Simpson. Are you from another country? How is the U.S. presidential election different from elections in your home country? Tell us about it online, Facebook, and Twitter. Send an email to intersection at WMFE.org. Samuel Ndala, what is the most difference in terms of the political system in Ethiopia that you see compared to the U.S.?
Yeah, there are some differences. You have here a president, we have a prime minister. There are a lot of parties campaigning, and the people listen to the media and they use the media. So we are in good position. But the difference is here there are many, it's freer than ours. There are jokes and ridiculing the candidates. The candidates have adverts, a lot of adverts in television, radio. We don't have such things a little bit.
Is it just then the candidates going out and speaking directly to the people?
Yeah. They just speak to the people and express their platform, their policies in television and radio, too. And there is this face-to-face contact and arguing with each other, too.
Do you think you mentioned the ridiculing of candidates,
yeah,
which happens in U.S. media in terms of comedy shows and this sort of thing. Is that a reflection of the culture in Ethiopia, or does that have to do with media regulations? Is that that the media is not as free or open, or would you say is it more of a cultural reflection of respect?
It's not the media that's not preventing it, but I think it's a cultural barrier. We are more of a shy society and respecting each other. We're not as open as that when you come to ridiculing presidents, candidates.
Let me ask you about that, Tito. In East Timor, is there this culture of making jokes about candidates and this sort of thing? And do you think is that a reflection of culture, or is that a difference in the media system?
I think it is because of the media system. We just have one biggest radio and TV public in East Timor.
Is it a state broadcaster?
Yeah.
Samuel, what is your impression, I guess, of American culture coming over here, and what's been the reality that you've experienced?
The voters are open. They are very much committed to the candidate in whom they support. They are very honest, straightforward, direct. Even the candidates are very honest and tell people what they should do and things like that.
Well, it's certainly been great talking with you folks. It's Samuel Ndala, who is a journalist from Ethiopia, and Tito Da Costa, who is from East Timor. Very nice to speak with you, gentlemen, and we certainly look forward to hearing more of your reflections.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
The conversation about what's happening in Florida politics continues online, WMFE.org/intersection, to find out more. There you can also sign up for our weekly podcast. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners. Our assistant producer is the Amy Green. I'm Mark Simpson, and thanks for listening.